Good day, everyone. My name is John Nelson, and I'm the head bookkeeper of the Colson Packet Company. That's the big steamboat line, headquartered here in Yankton, Dakota Territory. Now, I realize that may not sound like a particularly exciting job, but before that, I worked on the Missouri River steamers for almost 40 years. And as a result, folks always seem to be asking me about life on the Missouri. They think there's some sort of adventure, excitement, and romance about life on the river. But the truth is, the river is a dangerous place. And over the years, the dangers have changed. Now, those snags I've talked about, the big tree stumps in the river. The Army Corps of Engineers has been pulling snags out of the river since the 1830s. Now, maybe that's made a difference, and maybe not. There's a lot of boats sitting on the river bottom with snags through their hulls. Something that's really changed over the years is the way the Indians feel about the boats coming up the river. Back in 1840, when I first started working on the river, most of the boats belonged to the American Fur Company out of St. Louis. And most times, the Indians welcomed the boats. They knew we were bringing goods to the trading posts. And sometimes we'd even see them breaking camp as we passed, trying to get to the post to trade for the goods that we were carrying. For a while, the boats became a part of the Indians' lives, bringing goods, buying fuel from the mixed-blood Woodhawks who were allowed to cut timber on Indian land. Now, back in 45, I was on the steamer Antelope when a group of Yankton Sioux warriors hailed the boat. Well, I'll tell you, they sure looked fine, with their feathers and paint and their ponies all decorated, too. Well, the captain and the purser did some sign talk and some trading with them, and we ended up taking them and their ponies aboard, steaming about a half a day up the river, and then letting them off on the other side to continue toward their objective, which was to relieve the Pawnee of some horses. We generally got along pretty well with the Indians, as long as we were bringing goods to the trading posts. But then, the boats started bringing miners and settlers, and worst of all, as far as the Indians were concerned, soldiers. Of course, you know, the miners and settlers wanted the land, and the soldiers came to make sure they got it. And that's what changed the Indians from friendly to hostile. By 66, when I made my first trip with Captain Marsh, things had already gotten bad enough that the boats were being built with iron plates around the pilot house for protection. And a good thing, too, because things got a little hot on that trip. That was the time we were sparring over the sandbar at the White Earth River, and a bunch of Sioux decided they didn't like us there. Well, we didn't particularly like being stuck there either, and their shooting bullets and arrows at the deckhands who were manning the lines and spars didn't make things any easier. Now, no one on the boat was hit, almost like the Indians just wanted to harass us. A lot of the passengers fired back with a vengeance, but the Indians stayed pretty well covered, and I don't think any of them were hurt either. The next year, on the Ida Stockdale, we had a whole lot touchier situation. We were returning from an Army charter with one of the officers remaining aboard, and we had just stopped at Fort Stevenson, or, well, I should say where the soldiers were just starting to build Fort Stevenson. Well, while we were there, commotion arose and gunshots broke out, and amid all the confusion, a group of Indians managed to run off several of the post's horses and cattle. Well, a few hours after we left the post, we had just rounded a bend when suddenly the boat was peppered by gunfire from the left bank, and we saw several Indians swimming horses across the river. Now, we saw these horses, that led us to believe that this was probably the same group of Indians that had attacked the fort. Well, as we approached, a number of the Indians positioned themselves on a high bluff overlooking the main channel to the right of a long, narrow island. And from there, if they wished, they could shoot straight down through the unprotected roof of the pilot house and the upper decks. Well, Captain Marsh stopped the boat, and his brother Monroe, the chief engineer, held position by reversing the wheel. Well, Captain Marsh confirmed with the owner of the Stockdale and with the army officer, Colonel Holabird. The right channel was totally impassable, being covered from above, as it was. The left channel, which was also covered from a low level, had never been run, nor had there ever been any need to. There was no way to know how many sandbars or snags were waiting to trap or sink us, leaving us stranded for the convenience of our attackers. Now, the Indians did also cover the left channel, but not from above, so we had considerable protection behind the iron sheets, the cargo, and the fuel wood. Well, Captain Marsh studied as well as he could the shape of the channel, the amount of current, and elected to run the untried left channel. He signaled the engine room, and Monroe opened the throttles. As the boat swung toward the left channel, bullets again began crashing through the woodwork, sending splinters flying. Monroe dodged splinters as he crouched between the engines, desperately hoping that no bullet would strike a vulnerable mechanism or steam line. Everyone held their breath as the bottom scraped a sandbar, then scraped another. There was a long, low, groaning sound as the captain maneuvered between two snags, one of them scraping nearly the full length of the hull. And then we were past the island and putting distance between us and the Indians. That was a pretty close call. Now, on one hand, I don't plan on letting any Indian take my scalp while I'm just doing my job. On the other hand, I sort of understand why they're becoming hostile. You see, the season I worked at the big trading post, Fort Union, I learned some sign talk and did a lot of business with the Indians. That was back in 51, when Chief Crazy Bear was trying to marry off a daughter to that artist fella that was working there. But I learned a lot about Indians and how they lived and came to the conclusion, well, they're just folks, like anyone else. They look a little different from us, live different, pray different, but they're just trying to live and raise their families in their own way. And even by 51, that way of theirs was being changed by white folks who wanted land. Now, I know a lot of white folks don't see things the way I do. They figure the Indians are just a bunch of savages with no more title to the land than the jackrabbits and coyotes have. Well, to them I just say, take a good hard look at what white folks do to each other, and see if you still think you're entitled to call anyone else a savage. Well, I hope I haven't rubbed too many of you the wrong way, but I've lived and worked on this river almost 40 years, and that's the way I see things. Thanks for listening. Hope you come back.